This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 19th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Here in London, the skies are beginning to grey and the short days are setting in. So we're taking things indoors for this week's show. Inspired by all the fun of Freeze London last week, we decided to keep it arty. And so we're taking a whirlwind international trip for a few new gallery openings this autumn. In Beirut, we'll ask what the newly reopened Sursok Museum might do for a divided city. Over in Singapore, we'll get a sneak preview of the brand new National Gallery. And in Belgrade, we'll speak to a guerrilla group of artists who are taking the delayed reopening of the city's Museum of Contemporary Art into their own hands. Plus, back in London, we'll take a trip round the Newport Street Gallery, which is dedicated to showing works from Damien Hirst's mega collection. What's hanging on his walls?
We'll get surprise. We'll get things we weren't expecting, in other words, and that we might begin to see something more complex emerging than the kind of rather simplistic view of Hirst's project.
Notebooks at the ready then, as we give you a few arty tips to get you through the coming months on this week's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. In Beirut, museums are few and far between, but this autumn, after 7 long years of renovation, the grandiose Sursok Museum has finally thrown its doors open to the public. In doing so, it offers a much-needed gathering space and bolt hole in a fractious city marked by divisions. Monocle's Beirut correspondent, Venetia Rainey, went to the opening to find out more.
I'm standing in a crowd of people gathered for the long-awaited reopening night of the Sursok Museum. In the shadow of the enormous white building, an ornate wedding cake of a thing, priests, artists, critics, journalists and the curious are all excitedly discussing the latest addition to Beirut's cultural scene. One of those is Tom Young, a British artist and architectural activist who has been living and working in Lebanon for years.
I just think it's fantastic that such a thing is happening at the moment in Beirut. That it's happening at all. And I particularly love the exhibition about Beirut, about all the different paintings that have been done, particularly in the 19th century and early 20th century, on the lower floor. I think that's fantastic. I never knew these things existed. And I think it's really good that, as well, that the place is really celebrating Lebanese artists, so that they have, you know, a home in the city.
These Lebanese artists include Flavia Kotzi, a Sursok old-timer at the opening, who remembers the museum before its 7-year facelift.
My name is Flavia Kotzi. I'm a Lebanese artist. And I've been exhibiting at the annual Sursok Museum for a long time, since the 90s, like in 94. That's when I really started. We were waiting for this museum to open after like 6 or 7 years, so it's beautiful. That's what we need, actually.
Well, there are a lot of visitors. Do you think this renovation will bring the Sursok Museum back to sort of relevance?
Yeah, definitely. Now it's much bigger, it's on an international level, and it's going to be really good, I feel it.
With 5 times as much space as before, the Sursok Museum has certainly expanded, both physically and in terms of its ambitions. Underneath the historical building, there is now an enormous underground exhibition space that feels like a room in the Tate Modern, plus a research library, a state-of-the-art auditorium, and a restoration workshop. The idea is for Sursok to become a public platform for the city's residents. Director Zeina Arida explains more.
I just think that it's important to understand that behind what we call a public platform or a public space, it's really the idea of encounter of different social backgrounds, different profiles, and I think this is very needed. We need to regroup, not to separate. We need to have a more global relationship to the city, not community-based, district-based.
But her mission to reach outside of the museum's natural audience will not be without its difficulties. Arida again.
That's a really big challenge because already the museum is in a street, you know, that is very fancy. I mean, we're surrounded with the most beautiful houses in Beirut, and it's in Ashrafieh district. So all of this already give a connotation which we really want to stop from the start. So we're going to have to communicate a lot. We're going to have to communicate also outside Beirut because we want people to come from all different areas in Lebanon.
A big part of this outreach is being done via the museum's public program, a smorgasbord of events designed to tempt in art lovers and Philistines alike. Noura Razian is the museum's head of programs and exhibitions.
So we have walks around the city, artist-led walks that we've commissioned. We have workshops for families. We have a talk on gender and public space. We have a series of lectures that we're hosting in collaboration with the Académie des Beaux-Arts Libanais. And we have a series of film screenings curated by Roy Deeb. So the whole kind of opening program for the first few months is really investigating Beirut from different viewpoints, lenses, disciplines.
Previously a museum that for various reasons was largely irrelevant to most Lebanese, Razian believes the renovation period has given the team a chance to adopt a fresh approach.
I mean, we're a museum that's been closed for 8 years, so essentially we're a new museum, although we have a history of 50 years. So we're really relaunching what this museum is. And, you know, it's not just a space to come and look at art, it's also a space to discover ideas, to have discussion, to have debate, to explore and to learn. So really through the public programs, these are the kinds of messages that we're hoping will come out.
Back at the opening night, visitors have started to filter into the galleries themselves, with most drawn to the stunning temporary exhibition of art tracing the evolution of Beirut between 1800 and 1960. Between the romantic, oriental depictions of the city's coastline and more modern interpretations of the unrest of the late 50s, I caught up with NGO founder Sarah Trad to find out her thoughts about the museum's opening.
I think it's one of the best things that has happened to Beirut in such a long time. I'm extremely excited. It's a museum that's from Beirut, for Beirutis, and with Lebanese artists. So it's as local and homegrown as it gets. It's probably the first optimistic event we've had in a long time.
Beirut's golden era may be long behind it, but with the reopening of the Sersok Museum, it is entering a new, more thoughtful period, where art, history, and museums are increasingly becoming a bigger part of the cultural landscape. For Monocle in Beirut, I'm Venetia Rainey.
Thanks, Venetia. The Sersok Museum in Beirut is open now. Find out more information at www.sersok.museum. Sounds weird, but it's true. Now we're coming back to London, but nipping over the river to Vauxhall, where Damien Hirst has just opened his new art space, the Newport Street Gallery. The large building, tucked away down a quiet street near the railway tracks, is dedicated to showing off works from Hirst's vast collection of over 3,000 things. Not many people know exactly what comprises this arty hall, so there's much anticipation of what might end up hanging on the walls. To begin with, though, Hirst has chosen 33 eye-catching works by British abstract artist John Hoyland, a choice which divided the opinion of the critics. Producer Holly headed down to the opening of the Newport Street Gallery earlier this month to meet Kate Davies, head of Damien Hirst's collection, and the art critic Mel Gooding.
The aim of the gallery really is to show Damien's extensive, very diverse art collection. It's free of charge to the public, and we have six very different exhibition spaces spread over two floors. Our first show here today, opening our inaugural show, is by John Hoyland, works of his, paintings. He's a British abstract painter. This show will run for 6 months. The next show will run for the same amount of time. And we are just excited, after 3 years of construction of this gallery space, to be opening the doors to the public today.
And how do you see this gallery sitting in London's art scene?
I think what's interesting about this gallery is it's dedicated to showing an artist's collection. I don't think we have that in London. The space, as you can see, is really generous in its proportions. It's a beautiful new building to show an incredibly diverse collection in, so it should hopefully lots of people will be interested in coming and seeing what we have on exhibition here.
And how is it for Damien going from being the artist to being the curator?
I think he does both, to be honest. It's not that he's doing one or the other. He's still producing his own art, but this is a great opportunity for him to put on his curatorial hat. You know, he's curated major exhibitions in the past. He's been building this collection since the late 1980s. Something that he enjoys and he's good at, but equally he's still an artist in his own right producing works.
Damien used to use the space down here that he had before he acquired all the buildings as studio space. Will he still be making art down here?
No, it's now dedicated to presenting works from the collection free of charge to the public, so that's the focus of the gallery.
Can you maybe talk a little bit about John Hoyland's relationship with Damien Hirst?
He came into John's life as he came into all of our lives, you know, as the enfant terrible, if you like, of the young British artist phenomenon, and as an artist who had his own kind of spectacular art and created enormous disturbance, if I could put it that way, around himself for many, many years. John was very sceptical of and highly critical of the YBAs. He didn't like what they did and he wasn't particularly interested in what they did. In fact, he was very dubious about meeting Hirst, and when he did, he was immediately disarmed because, of course, Damien entered the conversation with the words, "You must be the greatest British abstract artist." Well, my goodness, you're not going to object to that as an opening, are you? And of course, it was totally disarming. Having made acquaintance, having become a kind of friend or having a kind of relationship with John, he then began to collect. And that was also likely to predispose him, John, in Damien's favour. Because, I mean, of course you like people who collect your work. And he did collect in depth. And my goodness, you know, if he has a debt to history, and I suppose any artist has some kind of debt to history, this is a debt richly and wonderfully repaid in this exhibition.
Damien has said that one of the things he loves about John Hoyland's paintings is the movement within them.
There's a tremendous play with what you might call the joy of acrylic, which I think is what painters discovered in the mid-60s. They discovered that you could do things with acrylic that you couldn't do easily with oil paint. And the eye is always aware of that variation. You have a sheet of red, but when you go close or even when you stand away, you look at it and you realize that the red itself is like veils of red, or there's a disturbance in the red. Some of the later paintings are a kind of hectic disturbance of paint on the surface, which itself is what I'd call kinetic. Everything is moving. In the earlier paintings, they're much more stately and kind of theatrical. The items on the surface shimmer, or else they are absolutely flat blocks of opaque colour. So you have, in the early paintings, a lot of the thrill comes from this constant kind of contrast of what I call opacity, when your eye bounces back at you, and translucence, when your eye goes through the surface. You have space which is a plane, and space which is recessive, or like the space of the sky. It just goes, and your eye keeps travelling into it.
And so what are you looking forward to seeing Hirst do with this space?
We'll get more of the same. That is to say, we'll get surprise. We'll get things we weren't expecting, in other words, and that we might begin to see something more complex emerging than the kind of rather simplistic view of what you might call Hirst's project, which is a creative project all round. If this is anything to go by, I think we're going to see a lot more things that we weren't expecting.
Thanks, Holly. The Newport Street Gallery is open now. You can catch the John Hoyland show until April next year. After the break, we'll get a sneak preview of the upcoming National Gallery of Singapore, and we'll be going guerrilla in Belgrade with the reopening of the Museum of Contemporary Art, which has been delayed, much to the frustration of the locals who've decided to stage their own opening.
Travel in comfort with the help of the Monocle Shop. It's the place to select the best bags, passport wallets, travel guides, and, of course, the latest issue of the magazine to entertain you on your lounger. We have a great lineup of special collaboration bags with Porter in Japan, including the new Overnighter bag, ideal for a city weekend trip. And then there's the limited edition Remova multi-wheel, made from lightweight polycarbonate in a special monocle edition. Visit our stores in London, New York, Toronto, Singapore, Tokyo, and Hong Kong, or shop online at monocle.com. Be the one turning heads at the luggage carousel.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound. Today, we're taking a global tour of some noteworthy new art gallery openings. Belgrade's Museum of Contemporary Art should have been open this week, or rather reopening in time for its 50th anniversary. But it's not happening after all, and the 8-year closure, supposedly for reconstruction, continues, much to the frustration of artists and public alike. Serbia's other main art gallery, the National Museum, has also been closed for more than a decade. But there will be an opening this week. Of a kind. A group of Serbian artists are staging their own guerrilla reopening of the Museum of Contemporary Art, and our Belgrade correspondent Guy Delorni went to meet them.
Well, we're just yards away from the corridors of power in Belgrade because the National Assembly building is just over the road, but we're actually deep in the basement of a bar opposite where something of an art plot is developing, and it's all to do with the reopening of the Museum of Contemporary Arts, long awaited after 8 years. It was meant to be happening on Tuesday, the 20th of October, and now it's not happening. People, understandably, are rather devastated about it, and one of those people is Milica Pekic, who's an art historian and curator. You must have been so looking forward to the reopening of this great museum.
It was a really optimistic message sent by the Minister of Culture, the current Minister of Culture, who actually presented some kind of energy and dedication to reopen the museum after long 8 years of reconstructions or attempt of reconstructions of the museum. The situation in Belgrade is such that our two major museum institutions, National Museum and Museum of Contemporary Art, are closed for long number of years. National Museum for more than 10 years, Museum of Contemporary Art exactly 8 years. So we were expecting that, and even the clocks were set on the boat building.
These are countdown timers, counting down the days to the reopening.
Exactly, counting down the time and days to reopening, and it was announced for 20th of October 2015. And suddenly, like just a few weeks ago, the public is being informed that the new director, which was elected a few months ago, is changed and actually moved from the position of director, that nothing has been done in the meantime, and this reopening is being again and again postponed.
Now, a certain art plot is going on. Now, Radomir Lazovic is one of the founders of the Ministry of Space, which deals with arts, architecture, urban culture, and is well known for provocative interventions, I would say, thought-provoking interventions as well. Are you planning some sort of intervention this time?
We are, as a society, gone to the place where it's normal for the Contemporary Art Museum and the other museums to be closed for such a long time. Then our actions are being considered like special interventions. Then we are in a really, really sad place, because what's more normal than for the society, for the citizens, to want to have their museum, the museums working, and especially this one, which is dealing with the contemporary art, with something that is happening in this moment that we are living in. I think that it is a crucial moment here that we will not let this to become a business as usual thing, a normal day, a normal going from one failed reconstruction to another. There is always some reasons, but I mean, I think that the society should not be quiet about this.
So on the opening day, if it's not going to be business as usual, what is presumably will be business as unusual, what's that going to look like?
It's going to look like an opening. They said it's going to be opening, and we are hoping that there will be an opening in different kind of measure and means, you know. So let's see and wait, and when the clock ticks zero, what will happen? We will be there and see if it's going to be opening, and maybe
you're hoping lots of other people will be there too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that this is really going on the people's nerves, the clocks. So it's they are ticking. So they are reminding everybody that there's going to be something on the 20th. So let's see if we as a society, or if we as a group of people that are dealing with contemporary art, can open this museum.
Milica, you're a curator. What sort of works are people missing out on by the Contemporary Art Museum not being open?
The museum is actually institutions that collect and has a huge and vast and very valuable collection of modern art. 20th century art and even before 20th century. And it's a very, very rich collection that is actually unaccessible by citizens. And if you have, and not only that, but the Museum of Contemporary Art probably should actually deal with the new trends in contemporary art, deal with the new practices, support new artists, support production, support communication of this new production with the world, support the communication of our collection with the world, and open the doors for new ways of managing the institutions and managing with contemporary art that the contemporary art practice actually demands. So having this institution closed for this many years, we are actually making a huge gap in development of contemporary art scene in Serbia.
It's a sad situation for an artistic community in Belgrade and in Serbia as a whole, which has been traditionally very vibrant, continues to be so, but this moment of what should have been joy at the reopening of the Museum of Contemporary Art once again turned to frustration and anger. For Monocle in Belgrade, I'm Guy Delaunay.
Thanks, Guy. According to the clock on the side of the building, the reopening of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Belgrade is now set for sometime next year, one to keep an artistic eye on. We're going to end the show in Asia. First mooted in 2000, the National Gallery Singapore has taken 15 years until it's finally opening its doors to the public at the end of November. Occupying the former Supreme Court and City Hall, the new institution is Singapore's answer to the likes of Paris's Musée d'Orsay and the Tate in London. Monocle's Jason Lee takes a peek behind the curtains.
It's Friday morning at the National Gallery of Singapore. With less than a month to go before the grand unveiling, workers are scurrying around, putting on the finishing touches, cleaning, and transporting artworks for installation. When its doors swing open to the public on the 24th of November, the National Gallery will be the world's largest repository of Southeast Asian works from the 19th to the 20th century.
The National Gallery Singapore aims to be a leading visual arts institution in the world, engaging our people and our neighbours through art, and to create dialogue between the art of Singapore, Southeast Asia, and the world.
Eugene Tan is the director of the National Gallery.
This will be the only museum in the world that visitors will be able to see the art histories of Singapore and Southeast Asia through long-term and comprehensive exhibitions. And because the art histories of Singapore and Southeast Asia are relatively under-researched, we hope to also further this and re-examine these art histories and rewrite these art histories through our research and exhibitions. And lastly, through our special exhibitions, we hope to explore the links between the art of Singapore, Southeast Asia, and other parts of the world. So for our first special exhibition, for example, that we are co-curating with the Centre Pompidou, we're borrowing from their collections as well as using ours to organise an exhibition called Reframing Modernism, where we relook at what we understand by modernism or the development of modern art, but from the perspective of Southeast Asia.
Finding a space worthy to showcase the 8,000 regional artworks is no easy task. In fact, it's one of the reasons why it's taken so long for the National Gallery to come to life. The decision was made to house the gallery in not one, but two stately landmarks, the former Supreme Court and City Hall. The gallery's Director of Project Facilities and Management, Shushma Goh, oversaw the overhaul.
Who was chosen to execute this vision to combine the two, and what are the key architectural interventions?
So we had an architectural competition, an international architectural competition, and finally the jury selected Studio Milieu as the winner of that competition. Studio Milieu was from France. It's a fairly small firm in France, and they teamed up with CPG, who are quite a large firm in Singapore. So both of them together brought our vision alive and gave us something that we really were so happy with because it was so respectful of the history and yet had some very clever design devices that made it a very unique sort of layout.
Actually, even from where we're seated at your favourite spot, there's some really interesting design elements. Can you describe some of them?
The first one that I would describe are these tree-like columns that you see. A lot of people think they're decorative or they look beautiful, which they do, but they're actually very solid structural solutions to a problem, which was we did not want things to be resting on these buildings because they're quite old and they have their own foundation structure. So the tree columns, which have their own foundation, actually act to support the entire roof, and the branches that you see are actually cantilevered structures that literally hold up the roof. So I like that marrying of engineering and architecture and the beauty and the beast all coming together.
Of course, being the National Gallery of Singapore, visitors cannot miss out on Singaporean art, which is spread out across four galleries in chronological order. As curator Charmaine Toh tells me, there are the more serious works.
So we have National Language Class by Chuam Ya Tee. If you look very closely at the upper left hand of the painting, you see the words Siapa Nama Kamu, which is Malay for what is your name. And that's the title of our exhibition, Siapa Nama Kamu. So just to give you a bit of background about this painting, it was painted in 1959, the year Singapore achieved self-governance. And at that point in time, Malay was the national language of Singapore. So here we have a painting where a group of Chinese students are learning Malay from a Malay teacher. And it's a very nice example of the kind of feelings I think that the artists of this period felt. And this is basically the section called Real Concerns. And it's, as you can tell, social realist works are hanging all around us. And they felt that art should serve the people. That was where they were coming from. And they wanted to depict the situation in Singapore at that time and to try and make a difference. I expect this to be sort of one of the paintings that people will come to the exhibition to look at.
Besides Singapore art, there's a whole host of Southeast Asian works on display, showcasing the entire range of techniques and art movements, as Adele Tan, the curator of Southeast Asian art, explains.
Yeah, so we try to go beyond, you know, the national boundaries that we often see with the national museums. And we are approaching this with a comparative attitude. So we like to see and draw comparisons and contrasts between the different artists of different countries in the same time period. But also as a pedagogical tool, you want it to be broadly chronological so the visitors can actually follow the movements and trends of the art history of this region.
It's quite a diverse collection, right? Southeast Asia has 10 countries. Were the themes and were the concerns of the region the same across countries?
They are. We can draw quite broad strokes that connect the different countries. Certainly, they would have experienced colonialism, although the different specificities of colonialism will differ depending on the colonial power that they're under.
You have the French, the British, the Dutch.
You know, the usual that you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So their responses are etched a little bit differently, whether they feel more against it or they felt more benign or benevolent towards their colonial powers. Yeah, you can see through the artworks on display.
Over time, as artists strove to create a unique sense of locality, we see the emergence of a distinct identity. Or identities, to be accurate. The National Gallery then is the right place to go, not just to be acquainted with the broad brushstrokes of regional art. It offers a peephole into the lives of the people who live here that may not be captured in official historical accounts. From Monocle in Singapore, I'm Jason Lee.
Thanks, Jason. And the National Gallery Singapore opens on the 24th of November. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was the always ever open for business, Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much indeed for tuning in.